Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:53 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is November 26th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week, and it really has been very eventful. I suppose Ireland and the peripheral Eurozone countries have been center stage for the majority of the week, and a number of the contradictions within the Eurozone have continued to come to the surface. So Ireland released its 4-year budgetary plan this week, and there remains doubts as to whether that's going to make it through Parliament on December 8th, and there's an election going to be due pretty soon after that. So that's a high degree of uncertainty that continues to push government bond yields above the 9% level, and that's at a new high. The resurgence of sovereign debt risks in the Eurozone has raised the contagion fear, and Portugal, Spanish, and Italian debt has all started to push higher. Spanish debt, in particular, is of worry to investors because Spain is a considerably larger economy than either Greece, Italy, sorry, either Greece, Ireland, or Portugal, and that's the potential for contagion is really quite a worry for investors in those peripheral debt. The Ifo index in Germany also was released this week, and it came out at a record high level. So on the one hand, you have the periphery, which is mired in slow or no growth, with very tight austerity measures being imposed, being compared against a German economy which is booming. And the DAX index reflects that to a certain extent, because Germany has been one of the better performing stock markets in Europe, and particularly when one compares it to the Spanish index, which is heavily weighted by the Spanish banks, particularly Santander, then there's really a marked contrast. Now, that's important because every big crowd that has ever existed is tolerant of massive contradiction. So back in the Nasdaq bubble, you had the supposition that earnings didn't matter, and of course earnings do matter. And during the mortgage and housing bubble in the US, you had the assumption that proper documentation and a steady job didn't matter if you wanted to be able to pay back a mortgage, and of course they do. And for the Eurozone, you have this supposition that you can have 16 different fiscal policies and one, sorry, yes, f and one monetary policy, and of course we're rapidly seeing that those fiscal policies are being brought into line so that there will be a single fiscal policy among Eurozone countries. But of course, there's also the exchange rate, and today's euro exchange rate is probably pretty accommodative from the perspective of the German economy. But if one goes back and looks at some of those legacy charts for the punt or the escudo or the lira or the peseta, and one can quite clearly see that today's euro level is actually rather expensive compared to where those respective currencies have traded in periods of dire economic need in the past. So that's also highlighting a massive contradiction within the Eurozone. During the inflationary period that arose before the financial crisis, Eurozone monetary policy was aimed primarily at those core countries where inflationary pressures weren't being felt particularly. But there was big inflationary pressures out on the periphery, particularly in Ireland and in Greece. And the interest rates that were outstanding were certainly not aimed at those high inflationary economies. Now, we've got exactly the opposite condition developing right now in Europe, where you have the comparatively high growth of the core contrasted with low or no growth on the periphery. And one has to question where exactly the interest rate environment is going to be pitched, because we remain within a very delicate situation. within the Eurozone, and inflationary pressures certainly haven't begun to pick up to any great extent. But from what we've seen in commodity prices over the last 6 months, where there's a number of raw materials, particularly cotton and agricultural commodities, are not only breaking upwards to new highs, but are breaking out of historic ranges. And that's important because, on inflation-adjusted terms, we're starting to see base formation completion for a number of these agricultural commodities or food commodities. Cotton is certainly one of them. You've had the same thing happen in sugar. The grains are doing the same thing, and you're starting to see that higher grain price over the last few years now beginning to feed into the feeder cattle and live cattle, pork bellies and lean hogs. And they're also breaking out of multi-year first steps above long-term basis. So we're starting to see that the commodity price inflation, while certainly not on the radar of central bankers right now, because they continue to insist that deflation is the biggest threat, is certainly rising. So inflation isn't that far off. And when one looks at it in the context of the Eurozone, I think it's a safe assumption that we're going to see the ECB act in the best interests of the biggest economies in the Eurozone, which means that they will raise interest rates if they have to, and that could doom the periphery to a rather uncertain future. So that's an additional pressure on some of these Eurozone economies. And when one looks at the global economy, the reason that some of these commodity prices are pushing upwards is because the global economy is doing very well indeed. And it's being led by growth in the emerging markets, particularly in the population centers of Asia and commodity-producing Latin America. And that's where the very best performance has been in terms of stock markets and indeed currencies. The US dollar has strengthened quite considerably this week, and not least against the yen. I closed out some of my yen shorts. Actually, I closed them all out earlier on this week, and that's now looking premature with the dollar rallying above the 84 yen level as of today. And it does look like the dollar can get a bit firmer from here, and particularly against something like the euro, where there is now a progression of higher reaction lows evident over the medium term for the US dollar. So it does look like the dollar is in a bottoming out process against currencies such as the yen and the euro. But elsewhere, particularly in Asia and Latin America, there is room for those currencies to appreciate further because that's where the growth is. So when one looks at the massive problems that are outstanding within the Eurozone, within the slow growth economies of Europe, the UK, Japan, and the USA, and when we contrast those with the high growth that we're seeing in Asia and Latin America, well, it's pretty obvious where the big investment opportunities are going to be. We're in the thick of the greatest urbanization in history. Now, China is well on the road to urbanization, but there are still literally billions of people under the age of 20 rapidly growing up, moving into their key consumption years. So the per capita consumption of commodities is rising right around the world, and that's a secular theme. The consumption of consumer goods, everything from autos to cosmetics to foods, is also on the rise. And if one simply looks on a granular level at the stock market indices in Europe and in the USA, then it becomes pretty clear which are the sectors that are outperforming in this environment. And it's almost exclusively those that are leveraged to the global growth story rather than domestic growth. And that's something that's likely to continue. The credit crisis has allowed governments to assume huge private sector debts, and government bond prices have, or government bond yields have been falling for the better part of 30 years in the USA. At the top of every bull market, regardless of the asset class, supply explodes. If this were a stock market, you'd expect the highest number of IPOs to happen close to the top, where companies take advantage of the higher demand for additional shares. And if it was a commodity, you'd expect companies to invest in greater production to capture those higher prices, or farmers to plant more. And in the bond markets, We're seeing countries such as Mexico issuing 100-year bonds. We're seeing governments right across the world increasing the supply of bonds to extraordinary levels, and they're assuming incredible debt. And there's only one way they're going to pay that back, and it's been the reliable way for governments to pay back debt over centuries, and that's to inflate their way out of the problem. And they've told us that they are literally seeking to cause inflation. And that is driving the bull market for fixed assets, and particularly the precious metals, because you can't simply go out and create gold out of thin air. And we've had a fantastic run in some of these precious metals over the last 3 and 4 months, and they have moved into a correction or a reactionary phase. But gold remains in the region of $1,363. It's been hanging around this level for much of the last few weeks. We've seen that a number of the stock markets have rallied spectacularly since early September. And they've all become a little bit overextended relative to the 200-day moving average. So risk assets generally have had this phenomenal bull run, but they, over the last 3 weeks, have moved into a period of reaction and consolidation. And we're seeing the beginnings of a reversion towards the mean for a number of these assets. But when one looks at something like gold, which hadn't become particularly overextended, it's held on to the majority of its gains really rather well. And that's helping to drive interest in gold shares. And I posted a list of a number of the better performing mid-tier gold shares, mid-tier because they're more leveraged to the gold price. And I posted those, I think, on Wednesday, if anyone is interested. And we're seeing that the Dow and the S&P have rallied impressively since their early September lows, when sentiment really was remarkably bearish. And they've gone right back up to test their April highs. And so far, we've seen them consolidate within the region of their April highs. The Dow Jones is closing out the week in the region of 11,000. The S&P isn't that far off of 1,200. And that's a pretty impressive performance, because so far they've held on to the majority of their gains, and provided they can hold on to in the region of half of their gain from the September low, then the chances that they're going to be able to push on to new additional medium-term highs or recovery highs is really quite favorable. But they're going to be led by companies that are leveraged to global growth. We've made a great deal about dividend aristocrats over the last few months, because a number of those dividend aristocrats, even though they're not paying stellar yields, they're paying remarkably reliable yields. And a number of companies such as Johnson and Johnson have been increasing or holding their dividend for decades. So a company like that is leveraged to global growth and pays out a reliable dividend. So you're getting the total return and capital appreciation, or the capital appreciation plus the dividend are flattering the total return over a significant period of time. And that's likely to continue to be a secular theme, because the way that we've characterized Wall Street for much of the last decade is that it's been in a secular bear market. But we've defined that bear market as being a generational-long period of PE ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. And we're beginning to see the rising dividend yields. The dividend yield on US blue chips is now above the yield on the US Treasury. And that really helps to hammer home the attraction of companies that are leveraged to global growth but have those reliable dividend yields. And they're likely to continue to garner investor interest over a significant period of time, because that's where the growth is. The greatest urbanization in history is a story that can capture the imaginations of huge numbers of people. And we're starting to see that the countries that are in the teeth of this urbanization, where the local consumer, the middle class, is growing, where the GDP growth is outstripping population growth and helping to grow that middle class, they are the most likely markets to perform well over the long term, either domestically in terms of their stock market or as markets for global-oriented companies for their businesses. And the per capita consumption of commodities is rising pretty much universally. Whereas the vast majority of commentary over the last few months has been in the soft commodities, which have rallied impressively, or in the precious metals, which have been hitting new highs, there's been very little talk about energy. And oil had a big week this week because it had gone down to test the $80 level, and it's closing out the week in the region of 83.76. So it's sustaining the move above $80, and it does look like it is more likely to break to the upside than to fall back down and test the lower side of the range. And oil has been very quiet for much of the last 15 months. It's been going sideways and not doing very much at all. And if we do start to see higher oil prices, then that is going to ram home the inflationary pressures that are growing in no uncertain terms. But it's also having an effect on the energy sector generally, because it's been an underappreciated asset class for much of the last 18 months, as oil has been at pretty has been pretty stagnant. And in particular, uranium is now starting to garner investor interest, and that's at least in part because oil is pressuring the upper side of its relatively lengthy range, and it's also because rare earth metals have become a cause célèbre among investors. And a number of those, particularly the smaller uranium companies, I think Ucore Rare Earth Metals, it had been Ucore Uranium, and it rebranded itself as Ucore Rare Earth. Now, that may sound suspicious, but at the same time, there's the fact that a lot of the rare earth metals are found reasonably close to thorium or uranium deposits. So there is that interest also helping to drive some of these uranium shares. And uranium is touching the $60 level on the futures contract, and that's the upper side of the relatively lengthy base, 2 and 3 years and counting for, base for uranium. So uranium shares have certainly begun to move to the upside, and a number of those Chinese companies that are centered on the solar sector in particular are also starting to show signs of life. And the big dividend payers in the major oil producers are also attracting investor interest. So it is looking increasingly likely that energy is going to become more of is going to attract a lot more column inches over the next few months. And that is going to have a it's going to begin to offer a headwind for stock markets generally if it starts to head very much above the $100 level. Given the fact that it's been ranging for such a long period of time, the chances that the well we at the chart seminar we define a range as an explosion waiting to happen, and it's been ranging for a long time. So once it does sustain the breakout, we could expect this to rally really quite quickly. And that will also help to turn the focus of attention back to the energy sector, and as I said, it's been a pretty moribund sector for at least the last year. Into the soft commodities sector, well, demand for food has been rising steadily as incomes have improved. And this year has been a pretty difficult year for crops generally. So while a number of these grains in particular have pulled back over the last month, they've still held on to the vast majority of their gain, and the medium-term outlook continues to look bullish. And against this background of nascent inflationary pressures, a global economy that is on a growth trajectory, and fairly low growth prospects for the USA and in Europe, then government bonds, this isn't a particularly favorable outlook for government bonds, because with inflationary pressures starting to pick up, And the supply of these things having exploded in the last year, and the USA not yet having made any real dent in its fiscal, or made any real effort to tell us how it's going to manage its fiscal position, then the outlook for government bonds is not bullish in the medium to long term. Now, US Treasuries were up a full point in here today, but they are still well below their September peak, or their peak earlier this year. And they're likely to be shorts on rallies for a considerable period of time. And it's not just US Treasuries, but it's going to be a pretty similar situation for a lot of government bond markets. So, long term, if we're looking to shoot fish in a barrel, then the opportunity-rich environment is likely to be in Asia and in Latin America. And domestically in the UK, Europe, and the USA, it'll be in globally oriented companies. Government bonds are likely to be a risky asset class to be in for a considerable period of time. And the currencies most likely to appreciate are going to be those associated with the stronger economies, and those are almost exclusively going to be in Asia and in Latin America. And because we have this massive urbanization, then we're in a secular bull market for commodities, commodity-related shares, technology, consumer stocks, particularly those that pay reliable dividends. And that's likely to be the case for a considerable period of time. And I think with that, I'll leave you for the weekend and wish all the best to all of you, and happy Thanksgiving to anyone who's celebrating it.